Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody from Chicago here. Welcome to today's podcast. We have the honor and privilege of talking to Mr. Anthony Figueroa, the CTO and co-founder of Rootstrap, one of the top AI and ML companies in the Bay Area. Anthony, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Ravi. It's a pleasure to be talking with you again.
Thank you. Yeah, Anthony, we've had you on a couple of podcasts before. Could you kind of just refresh our audience, like what your background is and how you got started in Rootstrap and what your company really specifically does?
Of course. I'm a computer engineer, and I started Rootstrap like 11 years ago, and we focused mainly on high-growth American companies. We have been working with all types of companies from, you know, really early startups to fast-growth companies to enterprise large companies such as Google. And we do a lot of different things from back-end work, front-end work, machine learning, blockchain development, design work. We have a really good design team. So, yeah, it's a 250-people company right now.
Excellent. Excellent. Congratulations. Now, the topic of today's show is the DAO and Web3. Could you please explain to us what the DAO is?
Yeah, of course. Basically, a DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization. It's the, let's say that it's the new version or a new paradigm to a company of how a company can work. The whole idea behind DAOs is that you don't have a central authority, but you have a community running an effort. And a DAO, basically, it has a vision, it has a purpose, it has something that they want to achieve, and some people, they come together and they create a couple of things. They create a way of working together, they create a way of taking decisions, which is called governance, and they create a system of incentives. So in some ways, it's a way to run efforts in a similar way that a company runs, but with a total decentralization of power, of decision-making, of incentive-making. So you have a community with a decentralized nature. You can have DAOs for all kinds of different things, and you end up, chasing a goal that the founders of the DAO set as the goal of that effort.
Okay, excellent. Now, can you please explain to us the different types of DAOs and some real-world examples that are actually out there?
Of course. DAOs, they are very, and I can talk about this later, but they are very and strongly related to Web3. And Web3 is the new, it's again, using this new concept of decentralization. You have a whole set of new technologies and a whole set of new mindsets to create products and to solve problems in real life and to go a bit in a different direction than Web2, which is, you know, big centralized companies such as Twitter, Facebook, or WhatsApp. And a lot of DAOs, they are basically creating the backbone, the infrastructure of Web3. And there are a lot of companies that fall under this category, you know. You have a lot of companies that use that are related to crypto trading, like Uniswap. It's a very, very popular one, which is a decentralized crypto trading exchange where, you know, community members, they coordinate and they have their own governance. And this crypto trading platform, they have a token, which is a governance token, which is like something that you earn by using the company or by entering the company when it was starting, or you can just buy a governance token and you can participate in all the decision making of that company, such as, okay, we have to change our fees, we have to change our infrastructure, we have to accept a new crypto token. Everything can be subject of voting, and the community members that own governance tokens are the ones that take the decision. Another decentralized community-driven platform is SushiSwap, very similar to, I can name Hyper, DAO, all these, you know, related to Web3, but you have all different, a lot of types of DAOs. I can name investment DAOs, social DAOs, art DAOs, game DAOs, music DAOs. Just to give you an example about investment DAOs, you can create an autonomous organization where you want to invest in real estate, and you start to get people on board. People start buying tokens on your platform. These tokens, they have some liquidity, and which you can create through DAO mechanics, and you can use that DAO to buy real estate, and then you can have dividends based on the real estate returns of, let's say, rents, and you can take decisions, you know, based on governance, how you're going to distribute all these dividends, if you're going to reinvest, if you're going to give that liquidity back to the community. And the same with every single vertical, you know, if you have social DAOs, basically, they are just that, you know, a community that comes together not to build or earn or create something, but just to interact, to hang, to socialize, to learn from one another. And often this, you know, these groups, they do much more. They are a decentralized organization, and they can take their own decisions about what to do. When it comes down to art DAO, you can have a community form around some particular artist. You can have a community form around an NFT. A group of arts. You can do different things. We recently had a DAO created. The name was Constitution DAO, and the goal was to buy one of the copies of the American Constitution, and they participated in the auction. They didn't win, but they participated. And so you have to think about DAOs are as collective efforts that have some type of incentives and some type of governance.
Okay, excellent. Now, what are the key factors to consider when creating a DAO?
You basically need a vision, you know, something that you can achieve. When you are when you have a governance system in place, which is basically a voting mechanism, which there are many different ways of voting, you can have a DAO making a deviation from its original purpose. So one of the things you want to make sure is that, okay, you have a vision, you have a goal, and any decisions taken by the community, they are not departing from this main vision. In practice, you can overcome that by just having the community taking decisions, or maybe it's a natural evolution of the goal that you want to pursue. But I think that you need some alignment and you need some participation from the community. The second big thing is how you're going to create this community. You need people willing to do things, willing to engage with your community, with your DAO, and willing to solve problems. A lot of DAOs are about solving real-life problems. So you have to keep in mind that you need the right incentives, you need the right governance, so you are taking decisions fast enough, you are not on deadlocks, but at the same time you are incentivizing people to work towards a goal, you know, and you can incentivize people. It's very typical to use crypto tokens created for the DAO, and if the whole initiative succeeds, the token that you are rewarding people with, the price can skyrocket. You know, there are examples of DAOs that started very small with a token that had a very small value in terms of US dollars, and it succeeded so fast and so strongly that the token ended up being very valuable, and a lot of people that started early in the game, they made a lot of money. And those are the type of incentives that you want. People that start early, that believe in the idea early in the process, they should be able to have an upside. They should be able to make a lot of money if that's one of the goals of the DAO.
Excellent. Now, can you define again, please, what an NFT is, and what does the NFT have to do with the DAO and the web?
Perfect. This is a very broad question. An NFT is basically a crypto signature of something unique. It stands for non-fungible token, which means unique, you know. A US dollar bill is fungible because it means that two bills are the same if they have the same print value. But an NFT is non-fungible, so it means that you can prove ownership of something. And why is it so useful for DAOs? Because one of the things I was describing is governance. And let's say that you create tokens for governance. Let's say that you have a DAO, you create 1,000 tokens, which are going to be used for decision-making. And and you can have different tokens with different type of access or type of decision makers. And a lot of times the DAOs, they sell NFTs at the start of the project, and these NFTs, they grant access to governance tokens. So it's a way to prove ownership and to grant permissions to different things that you want in the future. So let's say that you have a DAO of fans of a certain NBA team. So you can sell an NFT. This NFT can give you some benefits. They can give you benefits for, tickets for going to a game. They can give you, if you buy a very expensive NFT, you can have a dinner with a player. If you have NFTs, some NFTs can be used to take the decisions between the community of fans. This is very common nowadays. It's called fan tokens. And, this is very, there are a lot of opportunities happening here. I'm not constraining myself just to DAOs here, but if you think about NFTs, they became very famous with, all these art projects, but today I'm seeing a lot of NFTs on all different fields, music. You have artists issuing NFTs that will give you a lot of benefits, like going to concerts. You have chefs creating NFTs, and if you buy one NFT, you have some benefits, like going to one of his restaurants and having a special attention or having free dinners or things like that. You have all type of benefits on the sport, with the sports, going to the stadium, meet players, have a special seat at the stadium, or have, governance tokens on certain DAOs. Another great example is proof of ownership of real-life objects that are used on DAOs. Let's say that you start a DAO to buy cars, rent cars, and collect the money for car rentals. You can tokenize a car as an NFT, which means that you have a token that is a unique representation of a car, and you can sell that NFT to a group of people using DAO tokens. So you can be part of the group of people that owns the car that at the end of the day is going to generate some dividends, some profits that will go back to the car owners that are, and you have all that information in the blockchain. What is an NFT, what it represents, who are the owners or the owner of the NFT, and you can generate rewards to an NFT owner, which is how these things work. Another great example that's happening in several countries in the world is tokenization of real estate. Let's say that you have an apartment, you can divide the apartment in, let's say, 1,000 small parts. You can create an NFT for each one of these parts, and you can sell each one of the NFTs as a, each one of the parts as an NFT. So you don't have to, you don't need a lot of money to play in the real estate investment game. So that opens up a lot of opportunities to a lot of people to make investments on different assets, different business opportunities that today are not available for, the middle class. They are just available for people that have a lot of capital to do that. And then you can start combining those things. You can have peer-to-peer lending, DAO. You can have a real estate tokenization, DAO. So you can buy real estate. You can borrow money to buy your NFT, which represents a fraction of the real estate. And you don't need a lot to play a game that probably is not for everyone today. So it opens up a lot of opportunities.
Okay, excellent. Now let's move into the Web 3.0, you know, we all are familiar with the internet, web browsing. In fact, it's become a part of our life. What is the Web 3, and what are the main characteristics of the Web 3?
Yes, the Web 3, just to clarify, if you search, you'll find a lot of old definitions. Like a decade ago, a lot of people stated that Web 3 was going to be the next evolution of web, and they were talking about semantics web. That concept didn't take off, so a lot of people expected. And now we have a new concept of Web 3 that came basically from Ethereum community, which is this cryptocurrency very, very famous today. And to people that really believe in Web 3, it's the next phase of the internet. And if you are more radical, you can say that's the next phase of organizing a society. Just to be clear, Web 1 is, you know, the type of website that you read information, you are just a passive reader of information, static websites, static web pages. Web 2 is basically what you are, where we live today, the era of centralization, a huge amount of communication and commerce is taking place on closed platforms owned by a handful of super powerful corporations like Google, Facebook, Amazon. So that you have like one point of failure. You have, if you have a business on Facebook and they change their policies, maybe you don't have a business the next day. And Web 3, the promise of Web 3 is to break the world free of that monopolistic control. And at the most basic level, it refers to a decentralized online ecosystem based on the blockchain. Platforms and apps built on Web 3 won't be owned by a central gatekeeper. It will be owned by users. The users will earn the ownership stake by helping, to develop and maintain those services. That's why Web 3 and DAOs are so related. They are both based, Web 3 is more the concept, DAOs is the implementation of the concept. The basic idea behind this is radical decentralization, radical privacy. You own your data, your identity. It's user-centric. So when you use Facebook today, Facebook is a free service. So when you use a filter, basically you are the product. And the whole idea of Web3 is to return the power back to the users. You are not the product anymore. You own your own information. And another idea behind Web3 is digital ownership, you know? And when we talk about digital ownership, we have to understand that we spend more and more of our time on online, on a digital world. And you can call that metaverse or whatever is the buzzword today. But we have to be mindful that we spend more and more time today on online. And the new generations, they value much more their digital assets, their digital profiles, their number of followers, anything digital than their value, their physical goods. And that's the fuel that's behind all this NFT summer that happened last year, where you have insane amount of money being spent on digital art, you know? If you think about that, it sounds crazy, but it's not less crazy than things that we do today. Today you have many generations that value, watches. You can value a luxury watch. You can value a Rolex, and it costs you $20,000. And a lot of people pay that money for a watch. And if you think, what's the main goal of that watch is to tell you the time. So what you are actually buying there is your emotional attachment with a brand. You are valuing what the outside world sees, you know? They are valuing, okay, this guy has a very valuable watch, and he probably has a lot of ability on something, and he's respectable. And a lot of people think that way. And now you have a lot of generations that they see value on digital goods. So they may spend, you know, $50,000 on a very weird piece of digital art. And I'm wondering, you know, what's the difference? You can have the same quality of art for $10 and buy that, but it's all about the community around that piece of art. Is the respect that you get from the community, knowing that you know a piece of art that became famous, that became part of a larger movement. And that's kind of the parallels that I see. To me, Web3 is, to summarize, the move of a lot of the technologies from centralization to decentralization, the move from large corporations owning your identity to the people owning their identity, the move to people, the evolution of people giving more importance to digital assets than they give to physical assets. And you can see that some people buying land on different metaverses, you know, because they want to own something that a lot of people sees, and that's what they value today. And it makes sense. I mean, it's what people prefers today. It's not that it's good or bad. It's just a trend. And it can be a very long-term trend.
Okay, excellent. Now, will Web3 be the new norm? And if so, what are some of the obstacles that you foresee in its implementation?
That's a really good question, you know. And one of the main things that is told around this is that we are still on very, very early days. Even though all this has been, you know, being developed for a decade, the last 2 years has been crazy in terms of acceleration of people's interest of, you know, new technologies coming up, new protocols coming up, new ways of governance, which is key to all this. There are some obstacles. If you think about decentralization, it means that you can't rely on centralized servers. So do people want to run their own servers for everything? I don't think so. But some people, they do want. And some people, they get economical incentives for that. You can see that decentralized games. Some people, they run gaming nodes and they earn some crypto tokens for that, and then they can sell these tokens if they want. And a lot of people, they are, it's an investment. You can buy hardware and you can create a node for running platforms, decentralized platforms. I don't think that everyone will want to do that, but a lot of people are doing that, especially in games that require a lot of computing power. The premise of Web2 is that everyone is going to was going to be, you know, both a publisher and a consumer of content, but we know that not a lot of people publish content. And Web3, I think it's kind of the same. Some people want to have ownership of digital assets, and some people will just be passive actors of the ecosystem. The other big challenge is when there is something very important that I didn't talk today, which are the smart contracts, which is basically, to summarize, a piece of code that lives in the blockchain that has a set of rules relevant to some type of business. You can have a smart contract automating, you know, exchange of crypto coins. You can have a smart contract. Let's say that you have an insurance and you can have a company. And maybe your insurance company is leveraging the blockchain, and they have a smart contract. And if you have an accident, you just notify the smart contract, and you get, you know, your money through a blockchain transaction very easily after a few approvals of approved parties, which can be an insurance employee or something like that. The whole idea behind that is, you know, avoid bureaucracy, and it relies on the concept of code is law. If it's coded and if it's in the blockchain, then you can inspect that and you can see how it it works, under which conditions you're going to get your money back from the insurance, and maybe you can get more sophisticated and you can say, okay, I have a driver score, and the better I drive, the lower I pay for my insurance monthly, and all that can be programmed in a smart contract. And that could be amazing if done in the right way. But also it's a bit immutable, you know. Once it's in the blockchain, you have to change the whole smart contract to another one. You have to move all the people interacting with the old smart contract to the new one. It's much harder to make changes on a business relying on a smart contract. And the name that you can give to that, you can say that a smart contract is a protocol, and a protocol moves much more slowly than a platform, you know. And if you think about protocols, you know, emails have been around for 30, 40 years, and they are still basically the same. They are still unencrypted. They are basically using, with a few updates, they are using the same basic protocol than was used 30 years ago. But if you think about WhatsApp, they went from unencrypted to full end-to-end encryption in 1 year. And you can make the case that they can have private keys, and you can suspect that, this is not fully encrypted, but they can move much faster than a protocol. And you know, people are still trying to standardize sharing a video over IRC, which is an old chat protocol. But, you know, Slack lets you create your custom reaction emoji based on your face. That's one of the key takeaways of the history. You know, platforms move fast, protocols move slow. And we're trying to create a whole new era on internet based on protocols, which I'm very excited about that, but I think it has a lot of challenges anyways.
Okay, excellent. Now, as we come close to wrapping up our show, Anthony, what are the main cybersecurity concerns that you foresee with the Web3?
I think that to wrap up, two key ones, you know. One, ownership relies on keys. And a lot of people, they don't know how to manage their own keys. And they can lose their keys, they can lose ownership. And it happens with crypto wallets all the time. They can lose their seed phrases, a lot of things can happen. They can be hacked. They can store their keys in unreliable places and being hacked. And that's one thing. And the other thing is that smart contracts, they live on the blockchain. And it's code, you know, and they can have security flaws that can be exploited, and it happened a few times already, and they can have malicious code that, you know, most of the people won't audit the smart contracts that they are using. And it's very hard to, you know, to me it's almost impossible to have an entity auditing smart contracts because they you have new because it will stop innovation, but at the same time you need some protection against fraud. So my take on that is that probably smart contracts need some proof of ownership. So if you have a fraud, you can use existing laws and existing, you know, justice systems to go against the owner of the smart contract because you can prove that it contained malicious code that made you lose money, as an example. And those are two big hurdles that we have to be, I mean, they are going to be big problems in the future.
Okay, excellent. Well, Anthony, thank you for your time this morning. Or what time is it in Uruguay right now?
It's 2:40 right now.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time today, Anthony. We'd love to have you again to talk more about this, okay?
Thank you, Robbie. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for your time. Take care.
Bye.